Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Welcome to this week's episode of Lake Life Weekend Podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host. This is weekend 43 already. We are way into fall. It has been beautiful. I think we all know it. And if we live year round in this area, for most people, this is the most beautiful time of the year. Everything is settling down. Yes, we have winter coming up, but we know there's a lot going on in Lakes Country this winter season as well. I don't need to mention the mountain. I don't need to mention 200 miles of snowmobile trails, ice fishing, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing. There's all kinds of winter activities, even an indoor pool at the Detroit Lakes Community Center and Cultural Center. As we know, there's a lot in the area besides the fireplace, bottle of wine, glass of wine, I should say, good cooking, good food, hearty food. Yeah, the list is long. Actually, in fact, we are adding a little bit of recipes to our portfolio here. So cabinchef.com, you should check that out. We have three recipes published right now. Cabinchef.com, you should be able to download a little PDF. Try that. It's some fall recipes, a beautiful potato soup, a venison, a goulash, and then Bratapfel, baked apple. It's a traditional German fall winter season dessert that you also get at the Christmas markets coming up. So yeah, I thought I put those together and share them with you. Also, I would like to share, this program is supported by JCR Land Company, your local experts when it comes to hunting land and acreage. We had Mike Summers in our program, Mike Brown in our interview in the past. Those two are experts here for hunting land, so if you would like to reach out to them, it's jcrland.com. Thank you very much for supporting this program. And actually, news and events, please drive to our website directly. There's always the latest news items that we find. LakeLifeWeekend.com, you find interesting Lake Life news we find collected, and then also this weekend's events in chronological order, always starting with today. And if you drive there, you can see upcoming, you go down further. If it's Wednesday today, you can go down and see Thursday, Friday, Saturday with more. So please drive there. And I don't want to keep this any longer. We have Brand here today for an interview about his brewery. And he is located in Perm as well. He started this pretty much 2 years ago, a little over. And he says it has been a lot of fun. They have a tremendous amount of recipes and a great following, so I won't keep this any longer from our interview with Brett about Disgruntled Brewery from Perm. Enjoy and have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for tuning in. Hello and welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Brett Dobling from Disgruntled Brewing Company in Perm. And before we speak beer and brewing, welcome, Brad.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Brad. Who are you? Where are you from?
I'm from Verndale, which is about 5-6 towns to the east of here, of Perm. I grew up over there. Now me and my wife and kids live in Wadena. We opened Disgruntled Brewing about 20-21 months ago. We've just been having a blast.
Yeah, and I actually met you I guess 1.5 years ago at a little event at the Cactus. I think it was an after party of a show here in Perm, and there was a beer fair.
Yes, that was our first event where they asked us to come out into the public and serve our beer, and I remember that event very well. It was a fun event.
Yeah, and that's where I met you, and I followed a little bit your location, your brewing facility, and the tap room, and you have a beer garden. But before we tap into that, tell us about the history of Disgruntled or your brewing. So you started 10 years ago already?
Well, actually, it's about 7 years ago. My mother to get me into new hobbies, bought me a Mr. Beer kit from the Herberger's Mall in Brainerd Baxter. She bought it as a gift. It sat in my cupboard for a couple months, and one Saturday I was bored, pulled it out, absolutely fell in love with the hobby. A couple weeks later, I was buying used kegs off of Craigslist, cutting the holes in the top of them, welding in hot water heater elements, creating my own all-grain brewing equipment. Just fell in love with it. Best thing that happened to me.
Your mom bought you a kit for a hobby?
Yes. Oh, definitely.
I did not know that. That's fascinating. Yes. And then you build your first equipment modifying kegs?
Yes. Yes. Right next to brewing beer, building the equipment and the process fascinates me just as much. So, yes.
I'm from Germany.
Okay.
And brewing is a beer is a highly called product. We just mentioned the purity law, das Reinheitsgebot. I think it's 1789 or whenever that law was made in place in Bavaria. So we are very particular, and there's actually a college degree in Bavaria, one of the few where we can study brewing, engineering. I don't know how that brewing as yeah. It's kind of like going to cooking school or something.
Oh yeah, there's schools all over the world, but some of the most sought after to get in are in Germany. So,
yeah.
Yes.
And so I always thought it's an art, of course, but like how what happened in the past decade? Was it 10, 15 years ago that the traditional brewing became this craft brewing? It's not that old of a new trend.
No, I would say even longer than that. I don't know an exact date, but you know, you have breweries like Sierra Nevada, Sam Adams. I mean, they've been around 30, 40 years bringing craft beer, which wouldn't necessarily hold its candle to the German purity law. America, I believe, kind of revolutionized the craft beer scene, you know, doing weird, crazy things, alternative fermentations, adding ingredients that would be otherwise frowned upon in Germany to create a unique
taste. Flavor.
Yes.
So in Minnesota, how many small breweries do we have?
Oh, last time I looked, I believe we're up around 140. I might be a little give or take here or there, but about 140. We were the 97th, I believe, and we opened February 6th of 2016, Super Bowl Sunday, I believe so.
So significant growth of 50% in the past 2 years.
Yes, they average about two are opening a day in the U.S. every day. So it's what they're averaging right now.
A tap room or a brewery?
Both. A production brewery or brew pub, microbrewery. So
two a day?
Yes.
Is it really a booming industry? Like
yes, I believe the best way to explain it is the industry has changed. It's not so much when I was in high school, it was, you know, you go get your 30-pack or your 24-pack or whatever, and you drank only to get drunk. Now it's kind of approaching the same as how wine would be recognized, more of a social gathering type thing, you know, where you can have one or two or three, and it's not necessarily your main objective is to get drunk, you know.
It's about the taste.
Yes, it's about the taste.
It's interesting because I was a foreign exchange student 20 years ago, and I experienced in Barnesville High, in Germany, we could already drink, and we drank more for like 16 we can drink, and we get this all past us with 16. So with 17, we know how a hangover feels, and then we don't really do it anymore. But yeah, I was shocked of the behavior. So we kind of more consumed on a social agenda.
Yep.
And interesting. So it is transforming.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're seeing, you know, whereas like I said, in the past, you would go and you know, people would buy in bulk, and it was all about the price. Whereas now, people aren't scared to go out and pay $10 a pint or even higher, or wait in line all night for a special bottle release. I mean, yes, I definitely believe the industry is changing.
And the consumer behavior.
Yes, yes.
I think that's fascinating. That's interesting. So you started brewing out of a kit 7 years ago, and then you modified. Tell us more. So you grew the operation?
Oh, definitely. I started with this first kit, made the worst India Pale Ale anybody's ever tasted. then I built this all grain system. You know, there's many steps to brewing. There's extract, where the grains are basically put into a jug. Your sugars are pre-boiled down, and you basically just heat it up and add the hops and the yeast. Then you can get a little farther into your mini mash brewing, partial extract, where you're doing part conversion of grains, and then also you have your jug full of extract. And then the most advanced step would be called all grain brewing, where you're actually taking the barley or malted barley, cracking it, soaking it in hot water to extract your fermentable and non-fermentable sugars, and then running it, boiling it, adding hops, and then fermenting it out, and then packaging it. It's quite the process. I basically jumped after one batch of extract brewing right to all grain. I wasted a lot of money and a lot of time perfecting, learning the ingredients. A lot of batches seen my lawn, got dumped into the lawn. I got given a lot of grief for that. Why are you wasting that beer? If it wasn't right, I brewed it again. So I've...
So a learning by doing process.
Yes.
You never went to school?
No, I never went to school. I never interned at another brewery. I learned all from trial and error and Googling my answers. It was in any kind of questionnaire website I could be in, asking questions, looking at other people's responses, forming my own opinions. A lot of trial and error.
And how many people gave you feedback? Were you serving just friends and family?
At first it was, it's kind of funny. My partners now, their sister that's works at the brewery, but she's not so much involved. The first time I brought my homebrew over there, she made the puckering face. Oh, that tastes like a raspberry cough drop. And it was supposed to be a raspberry wheat beer. I had some mixed reactions at first. I'm not going to lie. I didn't really know what I was doing. But I just kept with it. The beer gradually started getting better. I started gradually understanding more of the process. And then before you know it, I was to the point where I started winning homebrew competitions. And then I met my partners now that basically approached me and said, are you interested in doing this for a living? And I thought it only took me about 2 seconds to say, yeah, I would love to do this. I was a sheetrock taper for 12 years before this, kind of starting at the bottom, working my way up to owning my own taping company, and then this came along. So
you're doing this full time?
Yes, more than full time. It's it's about 90 hours a week, but I absolutely love it.
And the tap room is located in Perham.
Yes.
And you have a beer garden, and you seat 40 people in there?
Yeah, in the inside we seat about 40 people, 42 people, and then on our patio we have room for give or take another 50.
Okay.
So.
And so one question, what's about the water before we talk about the varieties?
Oh, yeah. Actually, that was one of the biggest hurdles from moving my homebrew operation in Verndale to a commercial setting in Perm. In Verndale, we have beautiful, soft water that I could brew beer with. Here in Perm, love the area, but the city water wasn't that well suited for making beer. Basically, we have to run all of our water through a reverse osmosis system, basically stripping the water of all its minerals and hardness, and then we add back minerals to each style of beer. Each style has a different water profile. Each mineral does a different thing, accentuates different parts of the recipe. So it's basically every beer we make has a different water profile. So water is the most important ingredient that I run across. So.
And the recipes you just mentioned, do you write them?
Yes. It's basically comes back to when I just trial and error. I basically have used every ingredient I can get my hands on. Obviously, I haven't used every ingredient out there, but I would just continually use these ingredients, try new ingredients, you find what works together, and you kind of learn how things go. And I write all of our own recipes right now.
Yeah, you're a chef, a brewer, but like you're very creative.
I prefer idiot in the back.
No, I saw you. It's like an amazing kitchen. It's an amazing brewing room. tell us about what you have there right now. How many kegs or was it all called?
The one side is our brew house. Consists of we run a 3-vessel brew house. We have a boil kettle, a mash tun, and a hot liquor tank. hot liquor tank is only job is to heat the water that we'll be mixing in the mash with the grain. The mash tun is where we mix the grain in the hot water. There's perforated stainless steel screens in the bottom of the tank to separate the water sugar mixture, which is then called wort, unfermented beer, from the grain husks and grain material. Once we have our sugar extracted, then we'll move it from the mash tun over to the boil kettle. That's where the wort is pasteurized, and then the hops are added. Then we have tanks right across from the brew house. We have four fermenters, conical fermenters, that are temperature controlled with a glycol refrigerant, food grade antifreeze, if you will. We do a typical 3 to 5 day fermentation, a couple days for the yeast to clean up, and then we don't filter our product or pasteurize our product, so the only way we can get the solids removed from the beer and a crystal clear beer is by time and temperature. So basically with this glycol refrigerant, we drop the temperature in the tanks, thus creating all the yeast, tube, and hop material to sink to the bottom, and then we can suck off from a higher valve and pull clean, clear beer. The last tanks we have are the bright beer or conditioning tanks. That's where the beer is carbonated and then packaged out of. Right now we're packaging into half barrel and six barrel kegs. And then occasionally we do bourbon barrel bottle releases where we'll have a 25.4 ounce bottle that will, you know, wax the top and do special releases of our special beers. And then we also offer 750 milliliter crawler cans for off sale consumption or purchase at our tap room. And then we also distribute them on the wholesale side of things through our production brewery, excuse me. So
it's really large, and all the equipment, it was fascinating. A lot of stainless steel, very aesthetic, yes. very pretty. How many beers do you produce?
Right now, since we've opened, we're at 67 different beers we've made. At any given time, we'll have 12 on our on tap at our tap room. That's all the taps we have is 12. And a lot of times we'll have 13 or 14, but we just don't have room to serve them. But that's kind of the nice thing about being the size we are, is we're able to experiment more. When you have the bigger tanks that climb out the ceiling or the roof, you have to commit to your brands. We're making small 217-gallon batches. It really gives me the opportunity to try new ingredients, try a new styles of beer. If it is a flop, it's not the end of the world if we have to dump it. So, you know.
217 gallons, is it like 750 liters? Why is it 217 gallons?
That's the size. Basically, brew houses or brewing equipment usually are sized according to barrels. The equivalent of barrel is 31 gallons. So we run a 7-barrel system, so 7 times 31 is 217 gallons. Oh. So, and just because the system is that doesn't mean that we yield that for every beer. Every beer has different yields. The hoppy beers where we're adding, you know, 42 pounds of hops during the dry hop process, obviously we lose a lot of beer. Off the top of my head, I want to say we lose 29 gallons off each batch just to hop absorption. So, you know, every beer is different. So,
huh. So 67 beers brewed?
Yes. Yes.
And 12 on tap?
Yes.
Regularly? And like, every week, like you brew every Tuesday, or?
Yeah, we brew, I'd say, 2.5 times a week. That's basically all my brew house or my fermentation tanks allow me to. When I say 2.5 times a week, I mean 1 week we'll brew two times a week, the next week we'll brew three times a week, mm-hmm. and the following week back to two. Mm-hmm. We just hit 139 batches today. I just finished up about an hour and a half ago. So, I mean, you know, there's some weeks where we'll brew one batch. It's just
139 batches
since we've opened. Yes. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh yeah. Today I was like, holy buckets. Okay. No. Okay.
No.
Okay.
It, you know, not to go off subject here, but it takes us about 8-9 hours to produce the wort, get everything cleaned up, about another 7 to 10 days of fermentation, and then about another week of conditioning. So, you know, we can go anywhere from grain to glass, anywhere from about 10 days to a couple years, depending on the style of beer. Some of our bourbon barrel-aged beers, we let sit in the barrels for, you know, 18 months, imparting that flavor.
I saw that.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
We had really good success with our barrel aging program. Our first beer we came out with.
It's a wooden barrel.
By state law, we can't add liquor to beer to impart that flavor. So the only way we can get that flavor is by using freshly dumped barrels and then aging our beer in the barrels that once held these liquors. Our first one we did was the Imperial Brunch Stout, which is a 10% breakfast beer or breakfast stout. It had coffee, chocolate, oatmeal, maple syrup. Absolutely fabulous. We aged that one for 6 months in Heaven Hills bourbon barrels. We did two releases of that the first year. Our second release was Lord Burt, which we held in, which was a 12 percenter that we held in the Heaven Hills rye whiskey barrels, and that one also aged for 6 months. That one sold out in 17 to 20 minutes, basically as long as it took to walk through the line and purchase your bottles. We had guys camped out or people camped out in the parking lot overnight to hold their spots. It was just a absolutely awesome and humbling experience. They've done very well for us. They became pretty sought after. So we really expanded the program this year. We expanded it to five different batches. We're in the process now of considering a mug club or a barrel society, basically a membership that people can buy into and guarantee their bottle allotment for the year. We don't have the details.
Like a Kickstarter program?
Yeah. Basically, you would
invest into something to be produced?
Yes. You would buy your membership for, just off the top of my head, say $100. That would guarantee you four $25 bottles that you wouldn't have to stand in line for.
Pick up on you.
Yes. And we'd probably do some kind of a lottery system where you entered your email and random emails were picked to fill our 100 spots, you know. We're just toying around with the idea. You know, I mean, it's a really heart-wrenching deal when somebody drives multiple hours to come to your bottle release or beer release and then they don't get your beer. It really bothers me. I want everybody that really wants to have the beer to be able to get it. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen every time, so.
So, you say driving a couple hours and you described people sleeping in front of the brew pub. So you have quite a following. How many people, like, how do you know, how can you measure, how many Facebook friends do you have?
I personally don't have two or three, but
no. Yeah, you're disgruntled.
No, you know, I don't really know that. I don't know the exact number. I just know that we've kind of gained some momentum and hype during this 20 months that we've been open. As I was telling you before we turned on the tape here, you know, you come in on the tap room on a Saturday morning, you're going to see people probably from Bismarck, Duluth, Rochester, the Twin Cities, and no locals until later in the evening. I mean, we're really drawing, people are driving. We've almost become a mini destination, which is just absolutely awesome. I never even imagined in my wildest dreams
that they found Perm.
Yes, that they would want to come to where Brett Dobling's mixing barley grain, hops, and yeast. So,
and how did they hear about you?
Just basically word of mouth. You know, we started doing these beer events. The Minnesota Brewers Guild offers four events a year or three events where people buy tickets. They have 130 breweries. We go give samples away. Social media and just basically word of mouth has been the best for us. Beer people come in, they absolutely love our beer, and they start advertising online on their social media, and before you know it, it sparks more interest and more people come, and it's kind of like a snowball effect. It's worked very well for us so far. So,
and where do you get disgruntled products? You can obviously come to the tap room, you can drink it there, and then you can take bottles with, but, and you said distribution, so
yes,
where is it available for sale?
Okay, so this is kind of a hard question. I actually run our distribution, but I am accounts change, and then I say where it's at someplace and it's not because it sells out so quick. But yes, we have an on-site tap room where you can come in and have pints and flights or half pints, sample all the beer. You like something, you can buy it on our off sale through a growler, which is a 64-ounce container, or a 750-milliliter can, or a crawler, we call them. We offer both of them for on-site, off-sale, where you can come to the tap room and buy. And then as far as distribution, last time I counted, we were at 34 accounts, I believe, ranging from Grand Forks, East Grand Forks, to Moorhead, all throughout the immediate area, Perm, Dent, Otter Tail, all the way to Park Rapids, and then multiple accounts in the Twin Cities. Same with the cans. We have a couple accounts picked out throughout the whole state that we make sure we have cans at. A majority of them are in the Twin Cities, though. So.
And they sell out.
Yes. Last Thursday, I took on 5 new accounts to sell cans, and or excuse me, 7. We delivered to 7 accounts, and 5 of them Monday morning had emailed me to re-up that they had done very well over the weekend and were sold out or almost sold out. So it's been just awesome. I mean, you know, to have a cooler full of beer and then to, you know, wondering if you're going to be able to sell it, and then for it to just fly and you can't even keep it in stock. It's great for business. It's bad for me trying to organize it all. So
a chef never shares their secret, but is there like a, do you feel there's like a magic to your brew? Is there a secret that you say, hey, it's quality, and yes, it's that way because you're not going to share it, but what is it?
Attention to detail.
Okay.
Every aspect, you know, from the water to the cleanliness to, you know, sourcing ingredients, we take the utmost time and pride. You know, that's my biggest goal in this whole thing, is just to continually get better every batch. You know, to continually learn. I love to learn. And to just to try to outdo myself, you know. I mean, to clean the tank better before we start lautering or boiling, you know, to find a higher quality hops, and to find, once you open the bag, to find a way to store them better so that they don't oxidize and lose their aroma and alpha acids and flavors. So, I mean, we're constantly working on every aspect of our process to try to make it better. So,
I mean, it has been successful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. What's your favorite flavor, or like, what is your bestseller? What taste? Tell us a little.
You know, we're kind of known. At first, our you know, I call them the fluff beers. It's basically the real easy to brew stuff. Your blonde, ambers, brown ales, simple stouts. I think them are more of the locals' favorites, or they were to begin with. Now we're seeing this change. We've kind of introduced some new styles. It's called the Northeast Style IPA, which is more new to this area than your typical West Coast IPAs. Your West Coast IPAs are a lot more bitter, stringent, clear, whereas ours, the Northeast Style, are hazy. They look like reminiscent of juice, orange juice. And then it's not so bitter, but flavorful and aroma. We add most of our hops in these beers at the end of the process, which takes down on the bitterness. So that's a huge misconception of people that, oh, I don't like hoppy beers. They think hoppy beers are bitter. No, they don't necessarily have to be bitter. There's a lot of enjoyable hops out there. My favorite style is the hoppy beers. I love the hoppy beers, and then I love the barrel-aged beers, kind of depending on the season. You know, I mean, if I've been working outside all day, I love a lawnmower beer, a light pilsner, or a blonde ale. An everyday drinker would be an IPA, and a cold winter night sipper would be a barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stout. So.
I need a beer. But have you, like, you said summer beer. No, you called it a lawnmower beer, a Pilsner. It's kind of like, that's what I'm used to drinking in German, is a lawnmower beer. Okay, I do like the IPAs now, yeah. Which with the craft styles. Have you ever tried like a Radler? Is that we use Fanta, but Fanta in Germany is not so orange as, yeah, it's different. But I actually buy Schweppes sour lemon here.
Okay.
And then I mix it with actually an IPA, the Goose. And it's a fabulous summer drink. It's like half-half.
Okay.
And it's something refreshing. So it's lemonade, yeah. Kind of a lemonade and a half beer. And we drink it in Germany in the beer gardens, because obviously you don't get drunk that fast, yeah. Because you have more liquid, less alcohol. Have you tried that ever? Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's kind of a new trend in the craft beer industry, these beer mimosas, I believe they're called, mixing juices, sure. And different things with the beers.
Hefeweizen banana.
Yes.
We have banana juice with wheat beer, too.
Oh, I get the banana flavor from the esters created from the yeast.
Okay.
Which is...
We mix real banana juice.
Oh, wow.
It's interesting.
Yeah. You know, I tend to stay away from that style. I personally enjoy them occasionally, you know, the mixing or the mimosas or the, I'm kind of a purist when it comes to that form. The first Northeaster IPA we made, one of my good friends said, what kind of fruit did you use in this? And no, we didn't use any fruit. It's all replicated with the hops. So I'm a strong believer in that, at that sense, if that makes sense. So.
What I was referring to was more like a mixed drink, I guess.
Okay.
It's like you mix it after it came out of the... when you pump it.
Yeah, out of the tap.
Out of the tap, yeah. But... No, I was just curious because of the beer garden, and you know, if you have one driver, for example, the passenger can drink three beers, the driver shouldn't, and then you can, if you drink a mixed mimosas, then both can have a drink, and then it's still safe to drive. I was just just my experience, but
we do some garnishments with some of our beers. We do a chocolate milk stout that has Oreos in it that we garnish with an Oreo. We have a s'more stout scheduled for. Trying to get it done by Halloween, but we'll probably garnish it with a marshmallow or something. You know, it's just trying to do some different things. But no, I haven't mixed them yet. We've contemplated doing it though.
Okay, yeah. And your ingredients? Are they local? Are they Minnesota? Where are your ingredients?
We get ingredients from all over the world. I use a lot of German, Scottish malts, American malts that are grown in the Dakotas and malted here in Shakopee in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a new malting company in Detroit Lakes called Maltworks. We're going to be starting to use them once they get up and going. I'm a strong believer in every beer, or I try to change the base malts in almost all of our beers to keep them unique, along with the hops and yeast to, you know, to create a totally different beer from style to style. Our hops, we get from all... Australia, we get them. The Yakima Valley out in Washington, we get them. We have some local farmers and myself. We grow some hops and do a harvest ale. The yeast is all ordered in. I contemplated doing some wild scavenging for yeast or foraging, you know, go out and getting some local microflora. We had an opportunity a while back to replicate a beer from the Schroeder Brewing Company, which was in operation in the early 1900s here in Perm. Some of the ancestors are still around, and we were trying to put together something where we replicated their beer the way they brewed it in the 1900s, which would have in turn required me to go down by the Otter Tail River and catch some local microflora and start fermenting in a big oak vat with non-traditional or non-malted ingredients. So
Schroeder, so it's a very German name, so probably settlers. It was a brewing company.
Yes, it was right down on the river. I actually met with one of the ancestors' daughters, one of the master brewer's daughters. Awesome people. She brought a bunch of different literature, and she had pictures, and she explained how she lived there during her childhood, and you know, how her dad devised it, and it, just a crazy story. There was some laws at the time where he actually had to shut down for a while because he was so close to an Indian reservation, the one that came out on Squaw Point on Big Pine Lake, correct me if I'm wrong. So, you know, and after this had happened after 4 or 5 years of construction, you know, they devised ways in the 1900s to get water up to their breweries, and they had fires that they used to heat and, you know, their processing. And
fascinating.
Very fascinating. So it was pretty cool to meet with her, and it's not totally out the window. We might try again or do something in the future. I hope we can anyway. I'd really like to, even if it's a fail, just to at least to try it.
So if people want to find you, they can find you on Facebook, Disgruntled Brewing.
Yes.
Company, and then also Google will tell them. You have a website?
Yes, we have a website, disgruntledbeer.com. We're purchasing the domain name, or hoping to purchase Disgruntled Brewing from another guy that has it or whatever, long story. But you can find us there, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or calling the brewery itself. I believe it's 218-346-HOPS. So
346 for Perm and then hops.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Very good. And you're open in the winter season?
Yes, we change our winter hours, which we just did last week. Right now we're open Wednesday and Thursday and Friday 3 to 10, Saturday 11 to 11, and then Sunday noon to 6. That kind of changed from the summer. We're open Tuesdays, and we open for a little later on the weekends. We go to 11 during the week versus 10. So, yeah, make sure you get all your beer, you know, before you get to Monday and Tuesday. Unless you know me, then you can come to the back door. So,
Yeah, and what is with your new release parties? Are they once a month?
Just basically whenever I come out with new beers. Or anytime a beer has run out and we've canned it. We do a can releases where we'll hold it back until we usually do them on Saturday mornings. Just kind of seems the easiest for people. We'll release them, and then once they're gone, they're gone. And then every week we try to do one or two can releases. Some weeks are more, some weeks are less. And then hopefully here in the next couple months, we'll start our barrel age releases of our bottles. So,
age 6 months?
6 months to 18 months. Every variety's different. We've got five different varieties this year versus last year was two varieties. So it's going to be pretty cool. So.
And you're announcing all this on Facebook?
Yes. Facebook's the best way to, you know, to stay up to date or hip on what we've got going on. The gal that runs it for us does a really nice job. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming out and talking beer. And we learned a lot. And I think we're all happy to visit you in Perm at the brewery. And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Just love talking beer and you know, sharing so in the experience. So appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. And you have a wonderful weekend ahead.